Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast, number 17, for June the 9th, 2014. I spent about half an hour thinking about what to talk about. I'm always trying to be, you know, sort of original or, you know, something important. I don't want to just fall back on the same subjects each week. That's sort of, to me, sort of preachy. It's pounding the same nail kind of thing. So today I thought I'd scour the news and see what's current out there. And what came back is it's sort of the same as last week or the week before. The same types of things are headlines, all of them, without exception. I'll lead off with what I think is like the biggest story, the most human story, the saddest story. There's an actor, Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan is one of the stars, apparently, of 30 Rock TV show. And he's been hospitalized in critical condition after the limousine he was riding in was involved in a six-car crash on the New Jersey Turnpike. Well, when was the last time you heard of someone's limousine being in a serious crash? Now, yeah, limousines can be in crashes, right? Any vehicle can. But generally, the bigger the vehicle, the less serious the crash, because it can absorb the energy. You know, when a freight train hits a little car, the freight train wins. Nothing happens to the freight train. Even when they hit semi-trailers, we've seen pictures of them pushing semi-trailers down the track. I've seen the semi-trailer just hopping and being pushed along like a kid would push, you know, something in front of his toy car. The train didn't leave the tracks, and I guarantee you very little happened to that train. You know, they have cow catchers in front, of course. Big wins. So I've tried to rack my brain. I can't think of a limousine story where someone got hurt badly in a limousine. One thing you do hear sometimes is people in an ambulance. They have an accident, they're in an ambulance, and the ambulance gets in an accident. Well, anyway. So this guy had an unusual accident, you'd have to admit. What is his name? Tracy Morgan. Tracy 134. Morgan 775. Accident, looking for a place to happen. The hits just keep on coming for the 775. This guy could change his name. We're not prisoners of our names. Conversely, if he doesn't change his name, this is what he gets, over and over again. If you just looked at the stories that I've quoted that have come up that were, you know, big stories, over and over again, it's the same story. The name doesn't change. It forces experience. It forces a way of thinking. Anyway, so that's Tracy Morgan. Keep an eye on him, because they don't have a current condition update. Speaking of updates, Mr. Sterling. Peter Keating, a senior ESPN writer, apparently, he wrote a story about Donald Sterling. Sterling being the guy who said the racist remarks about the type of people he wanted coming to Clippers basketball games. Well, Peter Keating wrote about this in 2009, 5 years ago. Donald Sterling has been a problem for a long time. Well, Peter Keating was on, I think, Outside the Lines or something a few days ago. And there he is. There's his name. Well, what is his name? Well, Peter Keating, when you add it all together, 775. Another 775. What must it be like? You're a 775, you're attracted to this 775 guy. 527 team, basically the same combination flipped. You write about it. You write about this, you know, this ongoing disaster. Nothing happened. At that time when Peter Keating wrote this article, apparently nothing happened. No one did a single thing. And it was to do with Donald Sterling's rental practices. He's basically, according to Peter Keating, was being racist regarding his rental practices in 2009. And, you know, from what was talked about and generally accepted, it sounded discriminatory, let's put it that way. Nothing happened. So then we have a quote last week from the New York Times. This, to me, is the final exclamation mark or the final period full stop on the Donald Sterling show. Quote, "The only losers in the Sterling affair are the players." You may recall me saying that this was going to happen, that the Clipper players, with their 527, they're going to carry this for a long time. Sterling couldn't help but survive this. He's already, you know, he already had untold wealth. He was already, you know, he's 80 years old. He's through his life. He doesn't have to play basketball. And his remarks by themselves were not a punishable offense, really, even though the league tried to fine him. Turned out he's not going to pay the fine. In addition to getting his $2 billion for his team, apparently three times what it's worth, he's not going to pay the fine either. This guy came out, I was going to say smelling like a rose. He didn't come out smelling like a rose. He came out smelling like raw sewage and very rich. Like he found diamonds in the sewer. And you really have to wonder how much of this was on purpose. Washington Redskins right now, they're doing the same thing. Controversy about Redskins. Owner saying it's not a problem. Sounds racist kind of thing. And according to the dictionary, you know, it seems like it might be. Well, the Redskins want a new home for their team. They want a new stadium. Stadiums cost $1 billion. I know I've talked about this already, but it's the same gambit. You give me a $1 billion stadium, I'll change the name of my team. Seriously? Are we falling for this? This is how the billionaires operate. Come up with something bogus, get people to react to it, and then relent in some small way, and then everyone's like, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness it only cost us $2 billion. Oh, and there was one other thing with Sterling. I guess I got three different bits all in one paragraph here, which kind of threw me off. This is a quote. If he plays his cards right, Sterling's windfall could be tax-free. Oh, that's funny. So there's one ongoing sufferer, group of suffering people, the Clipper players, and then there's one guy who's literally laughing all the way to the bank and then past the bank and onto a beach somewhere. Oh, and Sterling put an appearance at a church, what appeared to be an African-American congregation church, and them interviewing him, and him, to me, it looked like he was acting like he was, like, infirm. Oh, man, seeing his face hopefully a final time, that for me personally was, how to describe it. I guess, you know, seeing the face of evil, I guess. So, also, there was a story about a video game. This is last month. I guess there's a video game called Drakengard 3. Draken, D-R-A-K-E-N, Guard 3. And the headline, it was in Wired, Wired magazine, Wired.com. The headline said, "The endless sex talk and supreme weirdness of Drakengard 3. Well, you probably already guessed it. What is Drakengard 3? 775. But what I wanted to get at was supreme weirdness. That is kind of, that's part of that 775, is to attract the supremely weird. In other words, Drakengard 3, I'm guessing, is the third in the series. So they already had the word Drakengard with its qualities. And then someone went, okay, now we're working on Drakengard 3. And they had a design session, and on the top of it was Drakengard 3. You know, like, that was the name of the product, right? They were working on, right? So people were thinking about a 775. And they came up with supreme weirdness, according to Wired. All right, so to balance that out, like I introduced last week, I come up with the good name of the week. Dustin Brown. Dustin Brown scored the overtime winner for the LA Kings last night in hockey. In hockey, the series are best of seven, just like basketball. And unlike basketball, they play two games at one location, then they travel, play two at the other. That's four altogether. And if they need more games, they play one, one, and one. They go back and forth. So the first two were at the Kings, and now the Kings lead the series 2-0. And I guess the Kings were the favorite team. The other games are in New York the next two, so I guess the tickets for this thing have been selling for thousands and thousands of dollars. Even the regular prices are in the hundreds of dollars, up to $2,000, something like that. And then I guess the scalping of these tickets is off the charts. Anyway, hockey is very exciting. It's great. I missed the game last night. I guess the Kings were losing. I think they were down by 2 goals. They tied it up, went into overtime, second period of overtime, and then Dustin Brown scored it by deflecting someone else's shot. So what is Dustin Brown? Dustin is 336. That's a balanced name. And you go, well, okay, I guess one chance, let's say 27 of that happening just by chance. Well, what about his last name? Brown. Well, Brown is the same as Maxwell, my last name. You know, when you combine that with the first name, this guy has a balanced, full name. In other words, his left hand is balanced, his right hand is balanced, and both hands together on the keyboard is also balanced. So that's unusual to be that fully balanced. You don't run into that every day. One chance in 2,000 of that happening, just by random chance. Oh, and he's the captain of the Kings. If you recall the guy last week, the rugby guy who, he scored the winning try with zero time left. That in itself was amazing. He touched down in the worst part of the end zone so that he had the most difficult conversion to kick, and he kicked it. So he was double amazing, and his total, you know, was a good total. So similar to how both of them won at the last minute. That's sort of interesting. I guess what I would say about that is the balance name is clutch, meaning the balance name can handle the pressure better. The balance name has probably prepared better, just because that's what they think about. The balance names are more serious. They're more, let's think of a reality show. In reality shows, you have some players and some people are serious, right? And that's what we assume when we turn on the show. And then it turns out the producers of the show, they want people who cause controversy. They want people who wear unusual outfits, who have unusual acts, who fit some minority demographic. And so the balance people, I'm thinking in particular of Gordon Ramsay's Hell's Kitchen, the balance people, they're the ones that actually get attacked. I've seen some attacking of the balance person because they just took it. I remember one guy in particular, I'm thinking a few years back, one guy, he was like this phenomenal cook. And they humiliated him. They actually humiliated him on the show. I'll just skip the details so that I don't have a lawyer knocking on my door. But that's what you get on a reality show when you're balanced. They hate it because it doesn't sell product. Controversy sells product. Well, Mr. Brown last night was just, you know, Mr. Reliable, Mr. Balance. And he was there when he needed to be, and he scored when he needed to score. Huge goal. That's worth millions. When your team wins, that's worth millions. He made that happen. Oh, yeah, it's a whole team effort. But then again, think about this guy with his balanced name as the head of his team. He's bringing balance to the team. You know, his influence extends beyond his stick, beyond his goal last night. I haven't even, you know, heard anyone talk about this guy, but I just know by his name, I know that's true. And even if he has a quiet influence, you know, some people are loud in the locker room. I'm thinking of Ray Lewis for the Baltimore Ravens football. He's one of the loud types. You know, he comes on this field and he looks like, you know, Superman ripping off his shirt or whatever. I don't know what his act is, but you know, he's known for his voice, his loudness. He is inspirational. Ray Lewis is inspirational, and he deserves a lot of the credit that he gets. But he does it in a loud way and not a balanced way. Lewis, 595, I think I even talked with the Lewis. Very unbalanced, very intense. Same as Sterling. Now, I'm not saying that Ray Lewis is the same as Donald Sterling, Pete's. But Lewis and Sterling have the same combination. And it's a combination that's intense, and it's its own worst enemy. Ray Lewis was in the news some years back. I believe, I'm just paraphrasing from memory, that it was something involving a murder. And Ray Lewis was somehow directly or indirectly associated with this. Well, one of the things about the five is they attract bitter experiences with people. I would say that that was a bitter experience with people for Ray Lewis, regardless of what actually happened. Well, with a balanced name, you attract good experiences with people, like Mr. Brown last night. I've never heard his name before. In other words, he's not going to be in the front page of the news because of a bad thing, unless it's a small tragedy, like his son. I don't want to staff him, but, you know, a family member has an accident or something. But then the family member has a different name, right? Anyway, here's to Dustin Brown, the good name of the week, who scored the overtime winner for the LA Kings. Okay, so this week, I don't have as much of a central focus to the talk, and I gotta say, I went to bed late last night because I was working to finish a puzzle. I finished a 1,500-piece Ravensburger last night. You know, 1,500-piece puzzle is bigger than average. If you go to Goodwill, which to me is sort of reflects what people buy, because this is what they turn in, right, once they're done. You know, the smallest puzzles you can get, not kind of kids' puzzles, are maybe 100 pieces. Dollar stores sell like a 100-piece puzzle for a dollar. And a common size is 500-piece to 750-piece. Those are quite common. I have some nice ones of those around the house. My favorite size is a 1,000-piece puzzle. I like a bigger picture. If I had, you know, infinite wall space, say I was decorating a set of offices where I worked, I would buy oversized pieces, big pieces, and I would make big puzzles. But not too big on the oversized pieces, but let's say slightly bigger than average pieces and make slightly bigger than average puzzles. And I would have to say that typically you get better quality photos from my accounting. And I'm looking around as I talk and look at some of my really great puzzles and their 1,000 pieces. That's my sweet spot, 1,000 piece. So this one was 1,500 piece. I went to Goodwill and got this last week. I went to Goodwill to return a puzzle. My wife had bought a puzzle for me that I already had. I'd already assembled. And so I took that one back, and for the same price as that one, I got a 1,500 piece Ravensburger that someone bought last year. This puzzle would have cost $25 or $30. They had given it to Goodwill. Now, hopefully, it wasn't because something bad happened to them. I think a lot of older people do puzzles, and bad things can happen to older people sometimes, and then someone disposes of the puzzles, right? Hopefully, that isn't what happened. Hopefully, it was just someone who goes through a lot of puzzles, and then they give them to others. Anyway, so this puzzle was printed last year, 2013, and so someone did it last year, and then they gave it to Goodwill, and I bought it for $2. And this thing, it's Ravensburger. In my opinion, Ravensburger, there is no puzzle as good as a Ravensburger. There are some that are very close. I'm thinking of Buffalo Games, BGI. It's American made, I believe. I think they're the best American puzzle maker. And then there's HEYE, which is a European maker, similar to Ravensburger, very close. Good, some good photos. I bought a couple of them that I'm thinking of, that I'm looking up at. One of them's of the pyramids, and the other one's of a stingray. They are really beautiful pictures. Ravensburger doesn't always have really good pictures. And the weirdest thing of all, you cannot just get the full Ravensburger catalog. I do not understand that. The only thing I can think of is they do limited production runs, and then they disperse their product out into their stores, because they don't want to sit on product, right? And so then, if you make a catalog and that puzzle isn't available, they ran out of stock. Dog dreaming. I lost my train of thought with the dog dreaming. Ravensburger. Oh, yeah. So I think that they're sort of stuck, that they make product. Maybe it's like an artist, right? An artist makes a run of product and then he ships it out, right? And if you want one of the products, well, you get, there's a set of them. I got number 126. Well, probably if you wanted number 124, that would be difficult. In other words, you have to take the set number that you get. And same with Ravensburger, you have to take the stock that they have available that they are currently advertising. And it's too bad. I wish there was more of a real time. This is what we got, kind of like Amazon. You know, you go to Amazon and you click on a product page and it says, 12 in stock. 3 in stock, in a better hurry, only 3 in stock. That's really handy information. And I think Ravensburger should do that. If Ravensburger displayed, let's say, 10 times as much of their catalog, and I know their catalog is 10 times bigger than what you can find on, say, Amazon, they would sell more puzzles. I would buy more puzzles of theirs. Trust me, I've scoured the web for puzzles and puzzle deals and everything. Ravensburger, despite being this great puzzling company, that's the only flaw, the only chink in the armor that I've seen, is not making their catalog as readily available. Anyway, Ravensburger is such a treat to work with. I think I might have said it, certainly in my puzzle video, that if I could afford it, I would only work on new Ravensburger puzzles. That's it. They go together so well, they call it soft click. Bottom line is, it's all fully interlocked, but the pieces go together just like they're meant to go together. It's like, remember they used to advertise car doors, maybe you don't remember, but 20, 30, 40 years ago, one of the ways to differentiate a quality car was how the door closed. Part of the commercial said, it should go thunk, or whatever the sound was. It should have this quality sound when it closes. Ravensburger pieces literally have a slight click sound and fit so beautifully when they close. It's just like you're closing a door on a very high-end car. Times 1,500 pieces. It took me 2 days. I just worked on it in my spare time. I sort of got on a roll there yesterday, and as you get near the end, even though it's the toughest part at the end on this particular puzzle, there's a tough theme. It's beautiful. It's a cottage, thatched roof cottage. It looks a little bit like Thomas Kincaid. Thomas Kincaid does some sort of really classic themed images, which I personally like a lot, and it reminded me a bit of that. It's big. It's one of my bigger puzzles, that's for sure. It filled my board. I use a 26-inch by 40-inch boards. I standardized a cardboard shape that I can fit it through doorways. When you work on big puzzles, you got to be able to store them when they're not finished and bring them out again. Otherwise, they hog a table. And if you have cats like we do, then the cats can sit on the puzzles like ours does, sleep on them, spread them out. Our cat is a spreader. When he sleeps somewhere, he settles in. And as time goes on, he just kind of pushes everything that he's sitting on to the fringe. And you'll hear, you know, crashing in the middle of the night kind of thing, some piece that he's pushed all the way onto the floor. Paperwork, he's indiscriminate. He's an indiscriminate spreader. He, by the way, is meowing. He wanted to get in just before I started the Floydcast because I had the puzzle on the table overnight. I glued it and it's drying, and I didn't want him to sit on the wet puzzle or even the drying puzzle because I don't want those hairs embedded in the puzzle, embedded in the glue. Anyway, this puzzle was satisfying to get done. I already had a lot of puzzles around the place, and there are still some areas that don't have puzzles on them, and some rooms are not fully decorated, and so I've been doing puzzles and sort of building up a selection of them so that the next time I put puzzles on the wall, I can have a lot to choose from. You know, having choice is a big thing in life. I think the difference between rich and poor is how much choice you have. When you have to eat hot dogs or ramen noodles, you feel like you have no choice. If you want to eat ramen noodles, then you feel richer. If you have just one puzzle, it's almost impossible to put it up perfectly because each puzzle is a different shape and size. You put one up, did you leave enough room for the next one? Well, it depends on how big the next one is and do the colors go together. And by having a whole bunch of them, you can lay them out. It's like a design. This is what a designer does, right? They have a fabric style, they have a furniture style in mind, and they do mock-ups, right? They lay out a room and they move the furniture around until they're happy. Well, the problem with the puzzle, especially the way I hang them, is I drive nails through them and hammer them to the wall. You're kind of committed there, right? Even if you take it off, which I almost never do. If you did, you'd have big holes in the wall. So you want to lay them out before you hammer them home. Anyway, another puzzle brick in the wall. Speaking of the wall, okay, I'm feeling the ramble now. I was worried, how was it going to ramble today? What was going to get me started? Yesterday, maybe the day before, I watched Pink Floyd, The Wall, before and after it. And before that, I watched, this is what started it. On public television, 2 or 3 days ago, there was a broadcast or a rebroadcast of Pink Floyd performing in Australia and performing the way it was built in the Comcast information guide. It said it was Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety. Well, no. No, it wasn't that. There was some Dark Side of the Moon, but they played their hits across various albums. In fact, I would say at least 4 or 5 albums. I grew up listening to Pink Floyd. My dad was a fan from the Amagama days and from the Echoes days. There was an album, at least one album before Echoes. I forget what they were because my dad didn't buy them, didn't have them. But Echoes was like a single, and then Amagama was 2 records. And my dad listened to those by the hour. He would put them on and he'd have a nap. That was napping music. I can relate to that now. For me, it's sports. I put the sports on to have a nap. When it comes to music, most people, they sort of are drawn to music from a hit single. And Pink Floyd is different. Pink Floyd has always been different, and they've avoided the singles phenomena. In that sense, I would compare and contrast Pink Floyd and the Beatles. The Beatles were nothing but singles. Even on their greatest albums, which, you know, have been voted, you know, arguably the greatest albums of all time, it's all about the singles. And they're all like 3 minutes long. Every song's 3 minutes long. I think there are some that are a little longer. But those are the exceptions that prove the rule. My dad hated the 3 minute song. He hated that predictability. And he has a good point there. Just as I was saying that, I was thinking of Boney M's Night Flight to Venus. If you want to hear a song that breaks the mold of songs, go to YouTube and type in Boney M, the letter M, Night Flight to Venus. That song don't fit the mold, baby. It's a classic. I think it's great. A great song. So my dad liked a song that was longer than normal, that didn't fit the mold. And my dad didn't like singing. And that's interesting. My dad was very sevenish. Very sevenish. 7 in the first name, 7 destiny, and he was a 1 under a 7. And even the 1, if you had to choose a number most similar to the 7, I would choose the 1. So he had the 7 all over the place. Well, what is the 7? The 7 is the thinker. The 7 is the quality that will work by themselves. The quality that has the most trouble expressing verbally. So isn't it interesting that he didn't like vocals? I think it's interesting. So he was drawn to Pink Floyd naturally. Pink Floyd is original music. They're longer cuts. And typically, Pink Floyd, the whole side of the record was the cut. It all went together. And, you know, the pinnacle of that was Dark Side of the Moon. even though Dark Side of the Moon has a hit in it, Money was a hit single, but it was part of the album. And Dark Side of the Moon was I meant to look it up. Let me look it up. Okay. Dark Side of the Moon entered the Billboard Top 200 chart, debuted at number 95 in 1973. It stayed on the Billboard Top 200 songs for 14 years. And then it says here, add in a later run on that chart and another 759 weeks on the top pop catalog albums, and Pink Floyd, with this issue, reaches a staggering plane of 1,500 weeks on the charts. That's 30 years. Oh, man. When was this written? You know, they say it was 30 years. Well, this was written 33 years after the album came out. In other words, this article was written only 3 years after they went off the charts. They were on the charts for 30 years. They're saying in this article in 2006 that Dark Side of the Moon has sold roughly 40 million copies. I just glanced at something else in Google which said 45 million copies. 45 million albums. In those days, an album... Remember buying Deep Purple Made in Japan for like $5, which was a really good deal at the time. Say it was $15 in today's money. So 45 million times 15. It's almost $1 billion just from one album. Can you imagine? So, Dark Side of the Moon, this was without a doubt the pinnacle album for Pink Floyd. After that came The Wall. So that was the second thing I mentioned I watched. I had got a DVD with, it's called Pink Floyd The Wall Before and After. And this was about the conflict between Roger Waters and David Gilmour, I guess throughout the band's life. And basically, here's the story of Pink Floyd in a nutshell. Syd Barrett was the crazy wild man of the band. And tragic things happened to him, and he was gone. And then Roger Waters was the creative genius, the lyrics guy. And then the, kind of like the Dustin Brown, the balanced person of the band was and is David Gilmour. Now, in this case, David Gilmour doesn't have the balance mathematically, because we're not talking about sort of a balanced field, right? Rock music is hardly a balanced field. But David Gilmour was and is the guy who creates that sound. For me, anyway. If you had to choose one person who creates that Pink Floyd sound, it's him. And Roger Waters was a driven, creative, genius type guy. Anyway, so the second documentary highlighted the differences, and it's very, very well done. You need creative genius. You need push. Pink Floyd had a double dose. And then you need someone who anchors the band. And I think David Gilmour has come to the realization that that's what he does. He anchors the band. What I like so much about David Gilmour is when I hear him perform 25 and 30 years later, the Australian concert I heard 2 days ago was the second time I've heard this. He's note perfect. It just sounds exactly like on the recorded album. And that is an exceptionally difficult thing to do, to reproduce your album sound. And there are many reasons for it. Number one, you know, some people use gimmicks on their album. They call it overdubbing, overmixing, mixing multiple tracks. Well, when you're in a concert, you've got multiple tracks, but they're all of the same sound. A rock venue is not a place to record good quality sound. You get one David Gilmour singing. David Gilmour can't back himself up. In the studio, he can. This sort of thing is done all the time. Auto-tune. Auto-tune is a modern gimmick. People in a concert would probably stampede if you used auto-tune. And that's anathema to a band like Pink Floyd. So auto-tune is out. They have a major glitch. If at the middle of your work someone shouts out something, that's not cool. And apparently this became a problem with Pink Floyd. After they became like this mega band with Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, when they toured with The Wall, I guess it became a problem that fans got more unruly. This is what it reminds me of. Jethro Tull. Jethro Tull is a lesser well-known band, considered a rock band, but really maybe a rock opera band. To me, it's a bit limiting to call them a rock band. Sort of like Phil Collins. I wouldn't want to call Phil Collins a rock musician. Phil Collins is a very talented, diverse musician that I can't easily categorize, except to say he makes music that large numbers of people like. Well, Jethro Tull is a one-man genius. Remember looking at one of the Jethro Tull albums? This was the one with the guy carrying a load of twigs, a giant load of twigs on his back. If you look for that album cover, you'll know the one I'm talking about. It's old. I'm old. That album is probably 50 years old, close to it. It's almost hard to not have those songs in my head as I think about it. Jess Hotel played the flute, among other interesting things. He sang. Ian Anderson was the actual guy's name. Anderson, very musical, 369. I had a 369. I was born with a 369, so you can imagine. You have a 369 and you listen to someone who's a 369, it's a super ultra musical combination, you know, you're going to relate to them. So flute, he sang, but he did at least half a dozen other instruments. When you looked on the credits on the back of the album, you saw that he did a vast array of instruments. Well, Phil Collins is similar. Phil Collins is known for percussion, which is interesting, in addition to singing. Very talented guy. Phil Collins, looking for a musical name. Collins 663, Phil 999. The 9 is the specialist. Adds power to the other numbers, so 3 is the music number. 999, 663, and then a total destiny of 663, 3 destiny. So Phil Collins has the music destiny, and he has those musical, highly musical numbers. Phil Collins is about as musical as a name gets, just looking only at the name. Jess Hotel, when they would perform, I remember one of their tours was called A Passion Play, and it was sit-down seating. You know, even though he was sort of, let's say on the fringes of rock anyway, he did sit-down seating in his concerts. Well, that was unheard of. Ian Anderson wanted you to sit down so that you would appreciate his music and not wreck it by shouting and whatnot. Well, Pink Floyd, part of them wanted that too, and they lost that when they became mega popular. So that's what really caused the split in Pink Floyd, for what it's worth. But, you know, these documentary guys, they have to sell a documentary. Well, anyway, once Roger Waters left the band, David Gilmour realized, you know, he tried to go on his own, and then he sort of came back to Pink Floyd, and he was like, I think he said to himself kind of thing, that's who I am. I'm Pink Floyd. I represent the band, and that's what I want to play. And I really like him for the fact that he can play such incredibly unique music, exactly like he recorded it in the studio when he's in a live performance 30, 40 years later. That is no small feat. I don't know of almost any other musician that can do that. I think, honestly, someone else that could do that, I would say the Beatles. The Beatles had a timeless quality and a reproducibility. You know, I'm thinking of Paul McCartney, surviving performer. Paul McCartney and Wings, he managed to keep the sound of the Beatles and yet be Paul McCartney, and hats off to him for that. David Gilmour is like that. He's at that level, without a doubt. Very special to listen to that band and that music. You know, every field has a tone to the field. You know, rock music has a tone to it. It has fringes. You know, rock music had something leading up to it, and it ends up going somewhere else. You know, rock music became, you know, punk and all these other ones that followed after it, right? It had a lifetime, and then it perished, and the next weed or plant grew from the composted soil of rock music, you know. But a given field can have a thought behind it. Often the thought is, you know, not good. In other words, it's designed to control you is what I'm getting at. And you have to work against that. There are forces in rock music that I detest with every fiber of my being. They are controlling forces, dark forces. You can probably infer them by who I have not talked about. Won't give them the credit, the time of day. Well, I'll say, Black Sabbath, very dark. Rolling Stones, horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. The worst aspects of rock music personified. The Grateful Dead. I made the mistake when I was in my teens. I went to see the Grateful Dead. Wow. What a profoundly disappointing and futile and waste of money experience that was. That's all I can muster on that one. You know, bands get a following, and people will be loyal regardless, and I assume that's what's happened with the Grateful Dead. And definitely it was what's happened with the Stones. The Stones are popular because the media wants them to be, because the big boys want them to be. That's the only reason they're popular. They play to the base emotions, right? They're the lowest common denominator, the dumbing down. Well, Jess Hotel was the intellectual fringe of rock music, but also the very musical intellectual fringe of rock music. And also, the cool thing with Jess Hotel, with Ian Anderson in particular, when you see the guy performing and you hear the sounds he can make from a flute and whatnot, what a free spirit. What a free spirit. And you know, that's the uplifting side of any field, is the free spirit. I'm also thinking of Carlos Santana. What a free spirit. What an exceptional, immense talent. The things he can do with the guitar, they're so soulful and otherworldly almost. And Eric Clapton. For me, Carlos Santana is better than Eric Clapton. More creative, more human. I would put it that way. Eric Clapton is part of very big bands, and he's like a big, well-known name. Music is a powerful influence in life, and we have to be careful what we listen to. And also, frankly, how often do we listen to it? You know, there was a period of time when we were all wired to our music, right? And then, it's funny, when you have something that's not available, and you only get, you know, a trace of it on the radio, or, hey, what was that song? I've never heard it before, you know, kind of thing. Then you lean towards the music, but, you know, today we lean away from the music because it's everywhere. It's streamed, it's in our car, it's in our iPads, it's in our phones, you know. We have it everywhere. And so, for me personally, I hardly ever listen to music. What I currently do is I have a couple of songs that I like at the moment, and I'll play them periodically when I think about them, but I won't leave the music running. And again, that's part of getting older. When you're young, you know, you have something running all the time, and it's usually music. Usually protest music, right? It's always protesting the previous generation. But music, I mean, what a huge subject. And one thing that's really interesting with music is that you can take a great movie, and many people will never watch that movie twice. Many people will never watch it a second time. I'm not like that, not at all, as you know. That's not uncommon. However, with music, it's the opposite. Almost all of us regularly listen to music again a second time. I find that interesting. To me, that's like an inconsistency. To me, we should listen to our music less often, less repetitively, and we should watch and rewatch stuff a little more often. Because when you watch something, one thing about it is you tend to learn more. You don't learn much from music, let's be honest. Name a song that you learned a lot from. In a way, a song is like gum. You know, you stick a stick of gum in your mouth and you chew it. It tastes good, and then after a while you... There's my stomach gurgling. I did an experiment this morning. I tried not eating and see if my stomach would not gurgle. I think it was even louder that time. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'll edit it out. You will wonder what I'm laughing at and talking about. So gum, you know, it starts off strong flavor. And then after a little while, you're chewing it, and you don't even know why you're chewing it. And then the gum gets hard. It sort of gets overworked, and it sort of stiffens. And then you, like, toss it out. And then a little while later, you have a fresh stick of gum. But the fresh stick tastes just like the first one, because it's the same flavor. Well, that's music. You either play the same song again. If you're listening to the radio, it's on a rotation, and 4 hours later, they play the same song. Certain songs are popular. Certain songs are on your mind. They're on your player, and you listen to them over and over. So if music is gum, what's a movie? I would say a movie is like an unusual food dish. A food dish you'd never heard of, and then you tried it, and in most cases you dislike it and wish you had never eaten it. But occasionally you try something that is exquisite. For me, prawns come to mind. I love prawns. I mean, I also like cheesecake, but I try to stay away from it. Or as my wife figured out, I love caramel. And maybe the caramel for me of movies, of watching, is documentaries. At my heart, I'm a documentary person. I'm a real life person. Biographies, stories of people's lives, stories of things that happened, someone getting to the inside story of something, that's what I like. What I dislike about most movies, they're really hiding it. Most movies are hiding the truth. Why would you waste time with that, honestly? You know, when I was younger, I got sucked into it, but now, not a chance. I went from avoiding fiction 30 years ago, 40 years ago, to avoiding now fantasy movies and movies that dramatize the truth, i.e. change it, dramatize events. I'm not interested in dramatized events. Let's just skip right to the documentary, if you don't mind. So music. We over-listen to it. I mean, when I grew up, my dad would play it, you know, as I mentioned, you know, my dad had a rock influence. He started with classical music. He switched to rock. listened to a radio station in Vancouver, Canada, now called CFOX. It was CKLG FM 99.3, and it became CFOX. It's probably still CFOX. And it was on FM. He built a special FM receiver. AM was popular when I was young, when he was listening. He built a special FM unit, stereo. It wasn't a stereo, it was mono. It had one giant speaker, a very special speaker that produced very special high-quality sound. He had his own little receiver that could pick up FM frequency. And so I guess, you know, that gave me a unique experience of something that became rock music, became something that now we have classic rock. And classic rock is that same rock music of 50 years ago, but now people, when they're in their 50s, are listening to it. Well, that says something about a genre. If you're listening to it 40 and 50 years later, it can't be all bad. It simply cannot be all bad. Yeah, there are whole aspects of it that are horrendous, frankly. You know, I can think of certain bands where if you try and think of a good song that they did, you'd be hard-pressed. And these are bands that people know the names, and if you ask them, they'd be like, oh yeah, that's a good band. Well, it's like movies, right? These bands sound good in theory, and then when you look at the actual content, it ain't there. Pink Floyd has always been there. Pink Floyd is, it's the Beatles for the next generation. And I have a special fondness for Pink Floyd. Who doesn't? So the long cut, perfectly played music. I was humming Pink Floyd tunes for days afterwards, and still am, even this morning. Really wonderful. So, you know, if you can extract the good from a given field, it's like with wireless. As anti-wireless as I am, I still have a cell phone. I still use it on occasion. Hopefully not to actually talk on it. But I have it running. It's not emitting radiation 99.9% of the time. It's a good backup device. It's like a pager. I use my phone like a pager. At certain times when I'm away from home, I can be reached if you need to reach me if it's an emergency. That's the limited good area of the wireless radiation spectrum. There are so many things going on in that field right now. Okay, let's jump to that. This morning, reading the news, headline slashed out, millions of smart TVs vulnerable to red button attack. Well, bottom line, when you have a smart, in quotes, TV, it's connected to the internet, and the internet can fight back. And the NSA can watch what you watch, right? They can track what you watch. Do you really want that? Of course not. So I'm going to step through these quickly just because they're all, you know, it's the same story, right? This was a good one. Also last week slashed on. Driver study. They surveyed drivers. The headline says, people want fewer embedded apps, just the essentials that work easily. Now they're talking about in a car. An embedded app is something that it's already part of your vehicle. It's like if your car has navigation, has a GPS navigation system, that's an embedded application. And they're saying that people want fewer of these things, not more of them. And people want just the essentials that work easily. Well, if you recall when I talked about my truck, I talked about it had just the essentials and how they worked easily. I mean, that's exactly what this study has found. But this study is, frankly, anti-wireless, right? It's anti-stick more junk in your car so you can be monitored and so you can be bombarded with wireless radiation. This article is reflecting the truth, and so they'll bury it. Okay, two more stories, wireless stories here. Intel, hang on, Pete. Intel Corporation, the big CPU, central processing unit company. There's a whole story behind Intel I'll talk about one day. Andy Grove. Back when I was first getting into computers, Intel was run by Andy Grove, chemical engineer. Came into the computer field. Well, I did the same thing, so I can relate. Intel, you know, genius company, leading edge. Always making the best CPUs, the central computing chip in your computer. Not in your phone. I've owned probably 100 Intel CPUs over the years. Well, the computer field is a lot smaller than the phone field. The tablet field. And so the computer companies, you can tell, are sort of itching, and there's been sort of an ongoing battle, or it's kind of like the Andromeda Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy. The desktop revolution, the PC, the personal computer, that's the Milky Way. That's where we've all lived. But the phone, the tablet, is the Andromeda Galaxy. It's bigger, it's more units, and it's coming towards us, and the collision is, you know, going to happen. In the case of those two galaxies, the collision is a few billion years from now. Intel sees the writing on the wall. Intel wants sales. The other thing that's happening is that desktop chips have reached the limit. It used to be Moore's Law, which was sort of like Moore's really his rule of thumb. Gordon Moore at Intel came up with a rule of thumb that worked for decades. And the rule of thumb was that the power doubled every 18 months. So every 18 months your computer was twice as good. It's like, imagine having a car that every 18 months the next car has twice the horsepower. And then 18 months, a year and a half later, it has twice the horsepower. And a year and a half later, it has twice the horsepower again. And the price didn't go up. This is what happened. My first computers were in the 1 megahertz speed. And now I have computers in the 3 gigahertz speed. They're 3,000 times faster. My first computers had, I forget the exact number of the memory. I think it was like 10K, the Commodore VIC-20. And now I have a machine that has 10 gigabytes. So 10,000 became 10 billion, a factor of a million. There was a use of computer that had 10,000, and now it has a million times more working memory. That's not storage, that's working memory. Imagine if, you know, when you were a kid, you knew 100 words, and then when you were an adult, you knew 100 million words. Whoa. So everything in the computer has just so exploded, but it's all reaching limits. Some things in particular worse than others. The speed, for sure, has clocked out. It's tapped out. It's almost impossible now to make a computer faster. Recently, Intel announced, different story, announced a new computer chip. I wrote on Slashdot about saying it. You know, this was depressing. They were announcing that the new chip had new glue. The glue that glued the heatsink, the fan that cools it, to the chip was new. And so it allowed the chip to run hotter and be cooled better, and so you could get a little bit of performance by all these tricks. And they used more capacitors. This is the first time a new chip is announced where they're not talking about the chip. It'd be like announcing a new car, and you're talking about a new road that you can drive it on. You're not even talking about the car, you're talking about, yeah, and there's these new roads that you can go slightly smoother or slightly faster on. Wow. That's where desktop computers are. So, what does Intel come out with? Here's the story. Intel wants to completely eliminate wires from computers. It's working on a series of wireless technologies to make that a reality in the coming years. PCs are on the way to a true no-wire experience. Isn't that the magic buzzword, experience? Your computing experience? What a vague, nebulous, undefined, can mean 100 things to 100 different people word that is. It's an experience, all right. How about punishment? Wireless punishment? Intel is working on technologies to remove the clutter of power cords. By the way, in one of the articles I saw on this very story, they showed a guy's monitors and whatnot, the back of his computing setup. In the back of mine, I have more wires than normal. I have, let's say, a dozen. In this picture, this guy had like 50 wires in the back, and they look just totally like a rat's nest. And the idea is, you know, you can get rid of all these wires, right? To remove the clutter of power cords, display connectors, and peripheral cables. Intel is working on new wireless charging, wireless docking. So charging, transmitting power by wireless, well, think of it, that's the ultimate way to ship radiation around. When you start trying to charge something wirelessly, you're really shipping a lot of radiation to do that. Docking, same with docking. Docking is when, think of it like you have two major components. And presently, those two major components are connected with wires, with a connector. And there's a reason for that, because things are happening billions of times per second. Well, to do that wirelessly, you have to transmit information through radiation billions of times per second. So you need very high speed. So you need very high radiation. Same with the display. Your display that you're looking at has high resolution. It has a lot of bandwidth that it needs. It has a lot of data that is being shipped to the screen 60 times a second or more. Bottom line, that wireless computer is a disaster because you have all that radiation right next to you. It's like a gigantic cell phone, as if we didn't have enough radiation from our cell phone, as if we didn't have enough from our smartphones, where we're using our phone for computer purposes, and we're holding it at arm's length so they can crank up the radiation because it's only measured based on what's hitting your head. Now we're going to have our computers doing this. You know, this is really insidious, ugly, nasty stuff. Especially because people don't know. They're conveniently not telling us. That I have a problem with. Alright, last story about wireless. A research team of Chinese and American scientists claim to have witnessed the mechanism by which sleep contributes to the formation of memories. Using advanced blah, they witnessed synapses being formed in the brain of sleeping mice recently exposed to a learning task. We thought sleep helped, but it could have been other causes, and we show it really helps to make connections, and that in sleep the brain is not quiet, it is replaying what happened during the day, and it seems quite important for making the connections. Well, wireless is a sleep robber. This is not the first sleep story I've seen. I see them every week now, two a week. Big stories on sleep, helping sleep, what kind, you know, how to get a good night's sleep. People aren't getting a good night. Yeah, we're causing the problem and now we're capitalizing on it, right? It's annoying. It's like, you know, heart attacks and strokes kill us all. Well, we all eat meat, right? Gee, color me shocked. I'm going to get to the of the week section. Bad driver of the week. The embedded apps thing is, you know, related to the wireless scam, but it's also going to make us worse drivers, right? I mean, we've all known that we shouldn't have a DVD playing when we're driving, but we text and drive. Some people shave when they're driving. I've shaved when I drive. You know what? Shaving is not challenging. You don't have to look at yourself. You can't look at yourself when you're shaving. If you do that, then you're really in trouble. Shaving is, you've done it thousands of times. You have muscle memory. You just, and you just, you know, electric shaver, and you just shave. Works very well. And it's a great little emergency thing, a way to save 5 minutes, you know, if you're late. Basically, what this is getting at then, bad driver of the week, is the distracted driver of the week. I must say that these days, there are two categories of bad drivers that I see on the roads. Number one, out of town, person who's from another town. And that's understandable, right? Where if the person's from Washington State or California, they're out of towners and they drive slower, they stop when they shouldn't stop, they drive the wrong speed, they go slow in the fast lane, they do all those mistakes, but really for a reason, right? You go slow in the fast lane because you want to turn left up ahead. That's something of a reason, and you just got in the fast lane too early. That's understandable. The distracted driving and doing an application while you're driving, that's shameful. We should be ashamed of doing that. We don't realize what a killer our cars are. Some things kill us, and we either don't know about it, like fluoride or wireless, or we know about it, but we like it. Bacon. People like bacon, so they eat it, right? They know it's not good for them, but they eat it. Or people like sugar. They know it's not good, but they eat it. And then there's cars. Cars are dangerous enough as it is, even if it's because of the other cars. Like the guy, this talk started with Tracy Morgan, riding in a limo, getting hit badly enough that he's in critical condition. What did he do wrong? He just had the name that was looking for that accident, right? So cars are dangerous enough as it is. We don't need extra distractions. We don't need extra applications. By the way, if you're driving a long distance in your car, you should have even less distractions. Simplify even more, because you want something that distracts your mind in a good way. And what I'm thinking of is like an audiobook. To me, an audiobook is a fantastic thing to have in a car, because you can learn something. Your mind is, let's say, intelligently, I was going to say distracted, but that's not the word, intelligently stimulated. Just like you feed your body, you need to feed your mind, and a good audiobook feeds your mind. That's what these Floydcasts are trying to be, is good food for your mind. Something that you can, like a good song, like a good movie, you can listen to more than once. You know, hopefully when there's a family of these recordings, when you reach the end, you start at the beginning again. Or, you know, if I keep making new ones, you don't even need to start at the beginning, but it depends how fast you go through them. What I'm thinking of is if you go on a long, long trip, then you need more of them to tide you through. So, bad driver of the week, distracted drivers, for sure. My re-listen of the week, sort of a play in the rewatch of the week, was the Pink Floyd concert that I mentioned. When I was writing it up to remind me in these notes, I called it musical perfection. Pink Floyd is a musical friend to me. It's like, you know, they talk about comfort food. Most of Pink Floyd is comfort music. By the way, some of the most controversial Pink Floyd stuff and the most edgy and most, aggressive and discordant was the Roger Waters stuff. The Wall, Pink Floyd The Wall. You know, that was maybe the most mainstream Pink Floyd and the most discordant. Interesting, Roger Waters, Five Destiny. All right, I'm going to finish up with the cool thing of the week. As you can see, I have no originality in the naming of things. And I have a tie for the cool thing of the week. One of them I just saw this morning. It's called the Elio. E-L-I-O. It's been invented by Paul Elio. It's a three-wheel car. Now, you know, a three-wheel car, not really new. Top Gear, the British car show, they have famously shown gag videos with an old-style British three-wheel car. Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson, he used the three-wheel car in some of his gags, some of his, you know, humor bits. The problem with that famous three-wheel car was the wheel, the single wheel was at the front. It's not stable. Right now there's a motorcycle that, I think it's called the Spider. It's being advertised on TV, and it's two wheels in the front, one on the back. That's more stable. It's not perfect, but it's much more stable. You get the stability of a car, you get the feels like a motorcycle of a motorcycle. Well, this Elio is kind of like that Spider. It's like that, well, it has two wheels in the front, one in the back. But the central portion of it looks like a car. Only, I think it's a single-seater. You sit in the middle. It's a single-seat vehicle. It's designed for commuting. It looks kind of cool. Looks like it's got some promise to it. It's got a lot of aerodynamics. It's like a super thin car with enclosed or covered rear wheels because you get better mileage that way. The front wheels turn outside of the car. It's like a Formula One race car or an Indy car. And the wheels are outside of the main part of the car. And then they have little fairings, little covers over them, so they're more aerodynamic. You know, this is a prototype. It won't necessarily look this way. But the guy's saying this car, he's trying to make it $7,000. So it's very cheap, like half the price of a smart car. And where a smart car gets, you know, up to 50 miles to the gallon, let's say 45, this is U.S. gallons. This thing is going to get projected 84 miles per gallon. So twice the mileage, half the price of a smart car. That's pretty cool. The other thing that's a tie for the cool thing of the week, I learned about it on Wired.com. Wired put the title of the article into the link. So the Wired link says, this mischievous key rack will annoy you into being a better person. Key moment, it's called. This little key rack, you put your car keys and you put your house key on it. One on each side of it. When you go to grab your car keys, your house keys fall on the ground on purpose. Oh, the one that's your house key, let's say it's your house bike key. In other words, let's say it has two keys on it, your house key and the key for locking up your bike. So when you pick up your car keys, your bike key falls on the ground, giving you another chance to make that decision. Do I want to ride my bike or do I want to drive? And I thought that was really clever. Clever name, key moment is the name of the contraption. You know, the contraption by itself, you can make your own, right? It's not all that profound. But this company that is making these things, MoMA, M-O-M-A, I don't know what it stands for, but anyway, they came up with that. That was pretty cool. I went to their site, and one of the contraptions they had come up with, most of them were impractical. One of them was called Clocky, C-L-O-C-K-Y. This alarm clock, when it goes off, it's got little wheels on it. It marches forward and falls off your nightstand. It falls on the ground and randomly moves around. It can withstand a fall of up to 3 feet. And it also, what I thought was interesting was, when you snooze it, you can take the wheels off, by the way, when you snooze it, it has a random amount of time that goes by before the alarm goes off again. And I thought both of those were good features. I guess I'm trying to think if I had a really good movie that I watched this week. I didn't really, and I've covered a lot of other things. Maybe I'll finish up by saying, in terms of rewatching or watching, French Open tennis today, that would qualify as a rewatch. As a kid, I grew up playing tennis. My family played tennis. We all had tennis rackets. I was really good when I was younger. You know, I could have become a professional or semi-professional. I was that serious about it, that ahead of the curve. I didn't. In my teens, mid-teens, I sort of lost interest, and it turned out that it was very hard on my knees. I kind of overstretched my knees and exacerbated my other knee-related problems. And in hindsight, looking back, you know, tennis damaged me. Without a doubt, damaged my knees, and I think that contributed to my back problems, because when you have one problem in one part of your body, you start to compensate. Anyway, that's my sob story, my whine about tennis. I had, obviously, a lot of really good experiences with tennis. In tennis, you have the four majors, like in golf. And the French Open is on this week, last week and this week. And it finishes today, Sunday, with the men's final. And Sharapova, Maria Sharapova, won the women's final. 3-hour match. That's unusual. For the men, that's pretty typical. And in Wimbledon coming up, I've seen 5-hour Wimbledon matches for the men. But anyway, I don't know who's in the finals of the men's. I'm going to say it's Nadal and somebody, probably Nadal and Djokovic. I know Federer's out, so. And Murray had trouble. I think Murray got eliminated by Nadal. I think that's what happened. So really, it's probably Nadal and Djokovic. I think that some people in tennis are using steroids. I'm not going to bother to say who, but it has colored my interest in the sport. It has tainted the sport badly. And I don't watch certain players now. It took a lot of years before I stopped wanting to watch tennis, but now, last year, this year, I'll still watch Wimbledon, certain players in Wimbledon. Wimbledon is more exciting. French Open is the least exciting. Clay is a very slow surface. So you get longer rallies, you get these big high bounces, and it's a slugger's game. It's more boring, less finesse. And the people who win it in the French Open, I don't care for as much. I don't know if I'll watch it today. And there's not much else going on. Might just bury myself in my work. Poor me. I have things on my mind. I talked about the toxic concept and subject and article and video for like a month before I finally came out with it. I have come out with it. Quite pleased with it. I know someone who re-listened to it, so that's kind of exciting that someone wanted to hear it more than once. 80 minutes on toxic stuff. Well, you know, that's 80 minutes well spent, because our lives are full of toxic stuff. And if we don't at least know what it is, boy, we're driving with our eyes closed. And that's what they want. If you don't want to be part of this NSA-controlled world, you gotta do things differently. In philosophy, they say, play the game, but don't be a part. That'll be my quote of the week. Some people, you know, they choose to opt out entirely and they try and go off the grid and all that. I don't try and do any of that. You know, some people try and go off the grid, some people try and shield themselves. There's talk, you know, these days, shielding your browser, secure browsing, and browsing in a virtual machine. Some of the techies do it this way. And I just look at it like, just don't do stuff that's controversial, right? That, you know, it's going to trigger their red flags, right? Most of it is easily avoided. I don't approve of their monitoring, but, you know, for the most part, just, you know, behave yourself. It's not all that big a deal. You know, it's overstated. You know, they're boiling us. We're frogs and they're boiling us. And the water's gradually getting hotter and hotter. And if we don't like it, we can opt out by suiciding ourselves. The suicide rate is surprisingly high. It's never talked about. It is substantial. I think it was in the top 10 on my toxic article. I think it was the number 10 way that people die. No, I think in fairness, some people always, you know, suicide because, you know, they're depressed, just in general. They have a depressed personality kind of thing. Some people are like that. And some people, I think, have chronic pain. They have such severe pain, why should they continue living? And I agree with that. You should absolutely have the choice. That shouldn't be a religious debate. That should just be no debate. You have choice. Just like I said, you know, you should have choice about an abortion. I'm not in favor of abusing that choice. Hopefully you learn from it. Hopefully you don't have to get in that situation. But you should have that choice. And it's the same with being able to kill yourself if you're done. I think that's how my dad went. My dad had a brain tumor. It turned out they couldn't operate on it because when you try and operate on the brain, the biggest problem you have is bleeding, uncontrolled bleeding, fluid buildup. And my dad's tumor was on the optic nerve. And it was basically wrapped around the optic nerve, and they couldn't figure out how to get rid of it without creating a huge bleeding problem. And so they gave up. So they closed him back up. And then, of course, as part of the tumor, he was getting horrific symptoms. As the fluid pressure builds up in your brain, you get really bad symptoms, and it can kill you, absolutely. And so then he had to have a shunt. So what they did was, instead of getting rid of the tumor, they just put a tube in to drain the fluid, bottom line. A mechanical solution. Well, I guess this shunt, pressure would build up, and then the shunt would release, and the whole thing was not without discomfort. My dad wasn't one to complain. My dad had a very high pain tolerance. He didn't like it. And one day my dad was walking. He was in a home, a retirement home for veterans. Dad was a pilot, World War II, moved to Canada, but Canada associated with Britain. If you were a British pilot, you got treated like a Canadian vet. And so he was in a Canadian vet's home, a good one. And yet he was not meant to be in a home. Even when he was, you know, brain tumored and 80 years old, he was much too active. He had a garden. He walked every day. You know, he couldn't stand the guys that were in the home, most of them, because they were just so sort of, they'd given up and said. But one day he was walking in an area where there was nothing and nobody. No stores, no houses, vast expanses, big fields, gigantic fields. There was a school, but the school had these, not soccer fields, but like a pitch, a slope, a hill off the north side of the school that was a very large hill. It was all grass. I can't imagine how long it took to cut the grass. And it went down to a road, and the road just sort of wound along. We're talking like acres and acres of nothing but acres, and a road with nothing on it, no houses, just a long sort of gradual curve to the road. But maybe for like a half a mile, this road did nothing. It had big sidewalks well away from the road. And for some reason, a car hit my dad in the middle of all that nothing. And I think my dad put himself in front of a car, and I think specifically he put himself in front of a speeding car. For two reasons, right? One is, a speeder's going to get you. They're going to hit you hard enough to kill you. Number two, they can't react in time. And number three, if you have to give someone some bad karma, you know, if you had to choose, maybe a speeder. I don't want to give anyone ideas. And this is just my theory. But it fits. Because what didn't fit was my dad getting hit by a... It's hard to describe. It'd be like being on a bike path and getting hit by a vehicle on a bike path. It was almost that much of a fluke. You were that far away from the road. There was nothing going on. The only place where he would normally cross the street, you know, immediately outside of his home, because this large veteran's home, on two sides was nothing but trees. The third side was that gigantic field. The fourth side was where the suburb started. But then they're not going fast, right? It's all 30 mile an hour speed limit. So I think he stepped in front on purpose. And that's okay, I'm fine with that. You know, my dad lived his life by his own standards. And he went out the same way. And he did it, you know, he was kind of clever, I think, at the end. Because he was bloody miserable. I remember one day, he just asked me. I was visiting him. I used to visit him, 4-hour visit every weekend. I was almost the only person that ever visited my dad, and I was certainly one of the only people that ever visited anybody in this home. This home had hundreds of people. It had a parking lot that could hold about 50 cars. On average, there would be about 2 to 3 cars when I would visit. 2 to 3 cars when I pulled up, at most, and 2 to 3 cars when I left. So 2 people were visiting, on average, at any one point in time. And this is on the weekend. What was it like during the week? It was sad. My dad was a great guy to be around. You know, people talk about missing someone who's gone. And I don't know if I would go so far as to say I miss him, but I valued his thoughts, his perspective. I enjoyed sharing with him. And there are times when I would enjoy that again if that chance was presented. I'll put it that way. It's like, you know, remembering a pet. I've had some great experiences with our pets. Our pets are getting older. You know, no one lives forever. I have to, you know, steel myself and get ready. These are the first pets that I can say I own. I think that's a terrible word, terrible concept. These are the first pets that I've thoroughly bonded with, rather than being someone else's pets. Someone else feeds them and I occasionally pat them. So you get closer. I don't want to be a prisoner of being closer, but I don't want to ignore it either. I think a certain amount of connection is good. Even to something that can have a downside. You just have to have that balance. I'm very glad I've had the experience of pets. And I have to, you know, be able to not be pulled down by it too. My dad had a great life, and he had to be not pulled down by it in the end. He didn't go out miserably. He got to the point where one day when I was visiting, he just said, "So what do you think?" That was one of his sort of favorite sayings that was so minimal. that you had to sort of be on the same wavelength as him to know what he was asking. And I thought at the time that I knew what he was asking. He was asking, so he was basically saying, how happy do you think I am right now? And he's even going one stage farther and saying, give me a rating on how happy do you think I am right now? And I said, 60-40? And he was almost surprised by it, you know, and he just nodded. So that was the conversation. He said, so what do you think? There was a pause, and I said, 60-40. And he nodded. 60% he could handle life, 40% he didn't want to be here. Well, it wasn't too long after that, right, where the numbers probably crossed over and it became 50-50, right? And that was probably his number. Maybe that should be our number. People hang on until they're 199. They're 1% wanting to be here and 99%. Life is taking them away. Taking them away with injuries. Taking them away with no one that they know being alive. Taking them away with Alzheimer's where they can't even remember their family members or, you know, what day of the week it is or what they used to do for a living. And still some people cling and hold on. It's not healthy. And yes, it matters, especially at the end. Don't cling at the end. Go gracefully. Go gracefully. Whatever your definition of graceful is, my father went gracefully. So play the game and don't be a part. And when you don't want to play the game anymore, you don't have to. This has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 17 for June the 9th, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.